welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And, baby, during our pre-show production meeting, you made a comment about having just returned from the Sojourn Conference. And I have to tell you, and I'm sure I speak for Piper in this, we are always fascinated by these tales from the road that you bring to the table. And I would like to ask one or two questions about the Sojourn
Conference. Yeah, throw it out there.
Before we get into our promos. So yeah. I would love just one or two like aesthetic offerings from that conference. Like, what did the room, what did the stage look like? What was the vibe? Because I find Sojourn stuff just kind of endlessly hilarious. So,
well, okay, so that on us. Two things really quickly. So you got to understand about Sojourn, as it continues to grow, it's becoming increasingly less hipster status, right?
So really? Why is that?
Well, because we got a lot of churches we're adopting, so we're getting in more of the khaki crowd. You know, I just offended an entire people group by saying that.
Dude, you're going to get the khakis though. When you lead with some hipster, the khakis are going to want to follow. So that's normal.
It's also called growing up, you know, at some point, kind of like all of the Driscollites grew out of their like black t-shirts and combat
their tap out t-shirt.
Things.
Yeah. Like, silver chain face. Yeah.
Which was always lame anyway, but, correct. So, yeah, so two things that kind of stick out is that they moved the conference back to one of the Sojourn Church locations, which is what's called Midtown. And it's like this crazy cathedral that they bought. And it's like over the top. They have all the massive like 24x28 stained glass like murals on the ceiling and all that. So you're kind of in this really, really sort of like awestruck environment, you know, as you're sitting there.
Liturgy. It feels like you're doing church.
And it's all liturgy. We had Zach Eswine. He was our keynote dude.
Oh, Swiney, man. Yeah.
We had him doing his thing. And again, which a lot of the Reform, you guys will like this, all right? A lot of the Reform dudes struggle with Zachy. They love him, but when he preaches, he always preaches through Proverbs. He's not linear. He never has like 3 points of anything. It always sounds kind of like scattered thoughts. And there's all this gold to it, but it never follows like a clear path, which I dig it. I love it. But you got all these other people that are like kind of around going, what did he just say? I'm like, well, I think he wants you to actually think rather than tell you what to think about what he just said.
So dude, I think I speak for all Reformedom in saying, I don't care about any of that. I just, does he go long enough? You know, that's really all we care about in Reformedom.
He goes long enough, but he's not trying to tell you what to think, baby. And
does
I know
it
that,
feel like a marathon? You know, are you exhausted afterward? That's all that matters.
Zachy goes, wait for it. This is going to shock you. Zachy goes a cool 35 minutes.
Dude, he's 35 is short for a Reform.
Oh, dude, it's like he didn't even speak.
We reject him then. I have issues with him now. None of the other stuff gave me pause, but that.
Yeah, a good Reform guy has like two 35-minute sidebars in his sermons where he's like, now this is not the main point, but I did discover this in my study of the original languages, and then 35 minutes.
There's no original language. Absolutely. There's no sidebar. And in fact, he does a lot of like weird like external like voices, and he's very he's very creative
like
and dramatic. Yes, he's kind of like that a little bit.
Where he does like the audience voice, where he's like, "Why is this guy talking like this?"
I mean, a little bit. That's kind of how he talks anyway. So he's so different for like what we're used to in our tribe. And then here would be the final thing, man.
Yeah, sure.
They always do a big gathering on the first night with and it's always outside. And they always like do it differently. You know, this year it was outside in this really dark courtyard with no lighting, which was weird. But what they did was they got a bunch of food trucks to come in.
Of course they did, dude. That's the most Sojourn thing ever.
So listen, everybody just engaged with hipster hot dogs, chicken wings, and craft donuts.
Man,
oh, sure they did.
I love food trucks because you can get like slightly above average food for way above average prices at like twice the normal amount of time you'd wait for it. It's just it's like the perfect dining experience while standing out in either blazing sun or in your case, dark.
What you really want is to stand around outside for a really long time on your feet.
In the Louisville freezing cold, eating what was supposed to be high-end hot dogs. And
dude, also that's great stewardship by Sojourn, because I'm sure they spent like $8.2 million on that experience, quote unquote.
We got it down to $1.2 this year.
Good stewardship, man. Tip of the distressed hipster cap to Sojourn, man. Those guys always do it right. So the Baby, you feel like you've been pampered? The pampering situation was what you were looking for, hopefully?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, except good. For the fact that they asked me to do an all-day teaching intensive. So I had a group of pastors for 6 hours that
are
I had
savages?
To entertain.
Baby, luckily, when's the next conf? A week and a half from now? So you're going to be looking at some more pampering here in not too terribly long, which is a good situation. So
not too terribly long at all.
That's Piper, right. Speaking of pampering and speaking of this week's sponsor, one of this week's sponsors, which, you know, if you come to Union University for 4 years, it'll be like you're at a Sojourn conference for 4 years. That's how you will be pampered. That's how you will be treated on campus. So our first sponsor for the week, Pipe, is Union University, which happens to be my employer. Union is a 4-year Baptist, Southern Baptist affiliated school in Jackson, Tennessee. I have taught here. This is the start of year 4 for me. So really, really love it, man. Really love Union. And I won't make you do a promo read about it. I'm just going to vamp about it for a couple of minutes. But I teach journalism at Union, so I'm in the communication arts department. And I think we have one of the best journalism programs, one of the best college journalism programs in the country. And I really, really love it there. But Union in general, I think, Pipe, one of the distinctives of it is that as a lot of Christian colleges, even big kind of brand name Christian colleges, are sort of slowly taking their slide toward kind of cultural appeasement and you know, kind of selling out some of their doctrinal distinctives, I think Union has remained manifestly Christian. We have great leadership. I think our leadership does a great job of both the kind of the student life side and the theology and mission kind of side. So check it out. Check out UU.edu. Union is a great place to study. Jackson, Tennessee is a very easy place to live. We have some really competitive scholarships to make Christian college not the thing that sinks your family financially. So check us out, UU.edu. You will be glad you did. So, Piper, tell us about Noah's Events Venues.
Well, I will in a moment, but let me jump in on this Union University thing because working in Christian publishing, specifically at B&H Books, part of Lifeway, we have pretty strong relationships with Union. And I didn't know a ton about Union before moving to Nashville, which is like 2.5 hours down the road. But I work alongside, I don't know, I mean, probably a dozen Union grads. We've had Union students come through as interns. We have a handful of Union grads in our church, a couple in our small group. By and large, incredibly gifted people who are pretty great to be around. And I don't know if that covers the student body as a whole, but the grads who I work with or know through church are all pretty awesome and really good at their jobs. And they come from a variety of backgrounds. So the liberal arts thing is like, it's not a Bible college. There's math majors, sure. There's literature majors. We've had one or two, I think, of your journalism students who have come through as interns and all exceptionally sharp. So the proof is in the pudding.
We have really great professional schools too. We have a big nursing program, a big pharmacy program. So, there's really a lot of
not
variety
to be confused
there.
With big pharma. That's just a big pharmacy program. Those are different things. But the proof is in the pudding. I don't know what that phrase means, but I think it means that the work
it's
turns
delicious.
Out well, and
it means
pudding
it's
is
delicious.
Good. So,
dude,
check
that's
out
right, man.
UU.edu, and then send your kids there and get those scholarships Ted was talking about.
Also, Pipe, fun fact, we have the nicest dorms I've ever seen, like, anywhere in my college travels. You know how college dorms are typically, like, barracks-esque and grim?
Yeah, a lot of cinder block.
Yeah, a lot of cinder block. Our dorms are all apartment style, so each individual kid gets their own little bedroom. So they live
in the campus getting wiped out by a tornado a few years ago.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't going to focus on that. But yeah, that was a decade ago. Most of the campus got wiped out by a tornado, and the result was a whole bunch of brand new dorms, which are really nice. So they're apartment style. Each dorm has like a kitchen, a couple of bathrooms, and each kid gets their individual space, which I know people tend to like that when they visit the campus.
But everybody's looking for safe spaces at colleges, Piper, and the dorms allow for them to have those.
Dude, everybody's looking for safe spaces. One of the pushes that I'm making at Union is for every student, all 2,000 of them, to get their own individual classroom as well. So I just think every student needs, in addition to their own bedroom, they need their own classroom space. to be yet more safe. But Piper, speaking of safe spaces, we are partnering with a company who does nothing if not provide unique and safe spaces for people. So tell us about Noah's Events Venues, baby.
That's right. NoahEventVenue.com. If they provide safe spaces for your church to meet, especially if you're a church plant or starting a new campus or all that. So they basically offer venues for lease, full service. So all of your audiovisual needs, classroom spaces, nursery spaces, kitchen spaces, parking spaces, all provided as part of the deal. So a friend of mine is a campus pastor for a church here in the Nashville area, because we need more campuses of more mega churches. And they ended up leasing space from a hotel, which tells me that I have not done an adequate job of spreading the word about Noah Event Venue, because they really should use that space instead. They started a campus at an Embassy Suites. That sounds awful to me when Noah Event Venue offers such great spaces.
That's so, a very un-Sojourn thing to do. They would never darken the door.
It's not even a Hyatt place. It's an Embassy Suites. The place with like the big courtyard in the middle, and like the whole place smells like a swimming pool because they have a chlorinated fountain in the middle.
Just wrap this up. This is painful.
Anyway,
so Sojourn guys are anti-chlorine. They're anti-chemicals. Natural.
Yeah, anti like cleaning chemicals. Certain other chemicals, I'm sure, are perfectly acceptable. But Noah Event Venue has none of those awful things I just said. They have very classy, nice, well-kept spaces in most major metro areas across the country. So go to noaheventvenue.com/church to check out what their offerings are in your area. If your church is looking for a new space, whether you're moving or expanding or starting a new church or whatever.
There it is, Piper. A lot of business, man. A lot of business to take care of. It's been good to be the happy rant lately with these sponsorships. So thank you to both sponsors, Union University and Noah's Events Venues. Boys, we were a little late getting into the studio today, so I want to get into some of these topics and get right into them. But one of the ones that listeners like that we weren't able to fully finish last time is, what are we reading or watching or listening to? And I think we got through – did we get through Ron's? Only? Mm-hmm. Okay. So we got through Ron's only. Ron, you can still talk this time. So don't feel like we're excluding you from this.
No, but, it's good, man. I was satisfied with talking about cooking recipes through Hannah Anderson's new book, All That's Good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm sure you're –
there's a lot of pie involved in that conversation.
It's a lot of pie. A lot of blackberry.
Cooking your way through Hannah's theology book. So that's good. That's as it should be. Boys, I want to talk about something that I'm watching, or something that I just watched. I just saw the movie A Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. And I have to tell you, man, it's probably the most impressive, challenging, interesting movie I've seen in the last 5 years or so. You know, and I had preconceived notions of Bradley Cooper kind of being limited to certain kinds of roles. And he plays a grizzled rock star, kind of an older rock star in this movie, still very successful, still playing arenas and got a great career. And Gaga plays sort of the up and coming young singer who's hungry for fame. And I have to tell you that the movie for me, more than being about, you know, substance abuse or music or anything like that, to me, it really was about the grossness of fame. And about 2/3 of the way through the movie, I leaned over to KK and I just said, I'm so sorry for ever wanting to be famous. Because I think, you know, being creatives and being in the industries that we're in, like, I know that there was a season where I really like dreamed about fame, chased fame, was interested in that as a concept. And boy, this movie to me, like, really shows it, you know, for all the grossness that it is. And, you know, fame was the thing that really, I think was the undoing of, you know, of the, both of these characters at some level. Fascinating movie though, amazing music, you know, really visually well done, great script, fascinating characters. Highly recommend A Star Is Born and catch it in the theaters if you can, because it's definitely going to be more impressive in that context.
That movie was getting Oscar buzz, as they say. Specifically, Lady Gaga's performance. Did you think that that it lived up to that hype?
Dude, I do. She was incredible. Like, I've always kind of been an admirer of hers. I think she has a really interesting career and obviously a really powerful voice. She was great in the role that they cast her in, acting wise. You know, there was a lot of just kind of raw, powerful beauty there without all the makeup and all the kind of persona work that she does in real life. So, she did an amazing job. And the film really showed a couple of things vis-a-vis romance that I thought were interesting, like just the quiet kind of intimate two people getting to know each other stage of a relationship that's so magical. They really showed that well, but they also showed that, you know, if you're depending on a relationship or a marriage or another person to fulfill you, that's a fool's errand. You know, that will not end well. And these are Christian concepts, right? The idea that we were made to worship and not be worshiped, and the idea that another person, another human can't kind of fill the void and give our lives meaning. I mean, these are things that Christians would affirm. Obviously not a Christian movie, but she did a really great job. I think if she doesn't win an Oscar, I'll be shocked.
Baby, did you ever see the original? How did it compare with the original?
Dude, I never did. The one with Babs, Streisand, yeah. and it was Christofferson and Streisand, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I never saw it. That's definitely on my list of things to view now that I've seen this one.
I'm kind of surprised. I thought you were like a deep lover of the Barbra Streisand catalog.
Yeah, you know what? Me and Babs go way back. I mean, I'm definitely an admirer of her work, but yeah, I haven't caught that one. I'll need to do that soon for sure.
Do you think that this? I just keep wondering because the last couple of Gaga albums have really tanked.
Yeah.
Do you see this as being kind of where she probably has her greatest future ahead of her is in acting?
Dude, I could see it. I could totally see it because she has an unconventional beauty to her, and acting looked very comfortable. You know, it didn't look unnatural. At no point was I watching the film going, this is a musician who's acting. You know, it felt really natural to her.
Well, she's kind of like Streisand too, in that she's not like, she's not a classic beauty, but she has all these like multi-talents.
Oh, most definitely. And she's not easy to classify musically or...
I was going to say, I think that's why her albums have tanked too, is because she, you know, she got famous doing sort of more like pop rock kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But then she went and did like a duets album with Tony Bennett and, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff that's just sort of... I think she just sort of likes flexing her creative muscles and doing.
And dude,
a ton
I like that she
things.
Likes that, honestly. Yeah. Like that makes her more interesting to me. Like I like people who do whatever they want. With no regard for the results. Really.
Well, and she reached an icon status really early, which again allows her to kind of do whatever she wants and still retain this level of celebrity and popularity. It's almost like it doesn't matter what she does, whether something sells or not, because she has established herself as one of the premier, you know, artists of our generation, really. But
yeah, I guess it's so funny to think about this movie in light of who she was like 8 years ago. Or six years ago, you know, in terms of the kind of impression that the public had of her then as this kind of countercultural pop star. She was in it for the shock value, making sort of weird music. And now she's doing like an Oscar worthy, artistic, deep, thoughtful film that is none of the things that made her famous in the first place.
Yeah, it's the maturation process, right? Which I think... You know, for a rock star musician to really be interesting, like to me, that's one of the ingredients. You know, I want to see how they grow, how they mature. And, you know, I think she's got a bright future ahead of her as a middle-aged artist, to be honest. And that was just a really interesting thing to look at. So, A Star is Born, loved it. Pipe, what about you? What are you reading, watching that you've loved since the last time we talked about it?
I think my affection for Leif Anger has been well spoken on this podcast over the years.
Oh man, and I salute that as well. One of my favorites.
Just recently, so within the past few weeks, I finished his most recent novel. He comes out with a novel like every 6 years, so he's real easy to keep up with. Unlike the John Grishams of the world who both write bad novels and write them often. So it's called Virgil Wander, and it's peak Anger. Like, it's so good. And I don't know how to describe it because his books aren't about anything. But they're really significant and thoughtful and meaningful. Like, they're not plot-driven books, which means it's very hard to say, like, oh, it's a heist book or it's a coming-of-age book or whatever. It's just a book about a guy in a town and the other people in the town and stuff that happens to them because they are profoundly human. But it's also really heartwarming and really sad. And the way that he uses the setting of the book as sort of a character. So it's set in northern Minnesota on a town that doesn't actually exist, but on north of Duluth, on the coast of Lake Superior, which is a place that I love. And so even that was just sort of a, you read it and you're like, oh yes, I know this place. I know these people. And he wrote it so well. So that's what that's the book that I've read most recently that I loved and will probably end up rereading at some point, which I rarely do, but this book was good enough to do it. I think he might be the best living novelist.
Yeah, I think I would agree, man. I've really loved his stuff too. Would you say this one is as strong as Peace Like a River, Pipe?
Man, it's hard to say because Peace Like a River was the first one I read. And, you know, the first time you get blown away by something, it leaves a stronger impression. And then the second and third times you read something that are equally as good, you kind of expect something as good. So Peace Like a River left a stronger impression. But I think as a book, this is as good.
Pipe, some of the reviews I've read have said it's not as strong. I mean, they haven't said it's – I certainly haven't read like a bad review of it, but they've not been like – they've been kind of underwhelming reviews. What's your take on that?
I think most book reviewers just across the board are very bad at gauging how they interact with a book. So they think they're being objective, but they fail to recognize what they bring in terms of expectations or in terms of – what, you know, what they hoped for, because really, like, there are books that are objectively bad, but a lot of books that we get frustrated by, it's because we were looking for one thing and it delivered something else.
Right.
And so I think, in those, you know, those are like the funniest Amazon reviews where people read it and they're like, oh, this is a book about faith and doubt. I wanted something about whatever. And you're like, yeah, but it says in the subtitle what it is. And so people are just kind of dumb that way. I don't know. I came to it just hoping for a really good story about really good characters, and he delivered in spades. It was fantastic.
Yeah, Pipe, I got a hard copy sitting right here that I haven't delved into yet. So
I know it's tough between all your leadership coaching calls and travels around for, you know, denominational stuff and all day.
It's rough.
Intensive.
Yeah, it's tough.
And, you know, there's not a lot of time for just sitting down and enjoying, you know, the best living novelist's latest offer.
I know. I want Leif to have just a larger part of my existence. And I just,
I mean, except for all those hours on the airplanes, but you know, I mean, there's other things that need to be done there as well.
Yeah.
You
but he's got to be working on his pro presenter slides for the next big thing that he's doing. I mean, there's a lot going on. I understand.
Ron, you know what? I'll read when I'm dead.
It's worth making time for.
How long before Ron becomes a leadership coach?
Well,
he's going to move within the year. So, I mean, he's leaving Ashland within the year.
I love how you say how long before, assuming that I'm not
you're not already one on the side. Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's Ron an off-the-air combo, baby. So you know.
I know it, baby. I know it. Ron likes to keep it mysterious. So we'll have that convo off the air. But boys, I am looking. Gosh, I'm looking through our show notes, hence the pause.
Live show prep, ladies and gentlemen.
Live show prep as we listen. So one of the interesting things that happened in my metro area last night is that due to some rain that's coming tonight, they actually officially moved Halloween to last night.
Which is absurd.
Yeah, thereby throwing, you know, every parent of small children into a frenzy of trying to make memories with them. And for us, obviously, boys, that means not Halloween, but Reformation Day. So I had to pull together my son's Jonathan Edwards costume, you know, just that much faster. And, you know, I had to find his little tri-corner cap and
his Luther robe,
load him down with books, you know, so that and find 11 like other smaller. Yeah,
give him a lemon to suck on so that he looks properly miserable.
The 95 Reese's peanut butter cups hanging on the wall.
Right.
You know?
I had to make him look miserable. I had to surround him with 11 children because that's what Jonathan Edwards had, which I think that's why that's the goal for all Reformed dads is to sire 11 children like their hero, Jonathan Edwards. But where does this come from, this weird unabashed love of Reformation Day? So this is something that's so ridiculous that Reform people should be embarrassed by it, but they're not. So Pipe, as the scion of a Reformed icon, where does this come from? Was Reformation Day a part of the Piper household as a child?
You know, oddly enough, it wasn't. I didn't know what Reformation Day was that I can recall until I was in college, and people who came from like a Dutch Reformed tradition started, mm-hmm. you know, they like wore their little monkish tonsures and brown robes and like made a huge deal out of it. I'm perpetually baffled. I think Ron mentioned the 95 Rices as opposed to the 95 Theses for those who are unfamiliar with solid. Terrible Reform jokes.
I think
it's hilarious that year after year the same joke is considered funny. You know, every year like the same picture goes up of somebody nailing those to a door and they're like, yeah. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. I'm like, it wasn't amazing last year or the year before or the year before that or the year before that. And it, you know, in fact, it's probably a repost of the same thing. So Reformed people struggle with all things creative and humor, generally speaking, which means I probably shouldn't be surprised with their response. But yeah, I don't know. We did like harvest party kinds of things and stuff like that. All sort of, you know, the church can weird anything up if they want to. But no, I don't think we did Reformation Day that I can recall.
I feel like almost every church I've been in, there's been like and this is not a gender driven comment, but there's always been a lady who's been really passionate about Reformation Day and has kind of driven the programming for that day in a way that's made everybody like low key uncomfortable / embarrassed. but yeah, that's always a fun thing to see unfold in a Reformed church. And I'm glad for it.
Yeah, it's like you do like the anti-papal screed poetry contest and all sorts of
the kids
things.
Love that though. The kids have so much fun with that. I mean, how could we take that away from them? Big R, being our resident hipster and also our resident church planner, not pastor, church planner. How does the hipster church planning community handle something like Halloween? Because Halloween is it's anti-hipster in that it's traditional. And it's sort of anti-Christian in that it's Satan's holiday. So, like, how do you deal with that as a hipster church planner?
But counterpoint, it's also an opportunity for adults to dress in absurd ways, which hipsters love.
That's every day though for hipsters. I mean,
well, right,
you know.
But this is like a different kind of absurd.
I mean, you could make the argument that every day is both Reformation Day and Halloween, and that hipsters are dressing as like, you know, blacksmiths from the 1800s or, you know, metallurgists or
and
whatever.
And
Reformed people are having no fun. So Big R, speak some wisdom into this for us.
Well, I mean, dude, it's all over the map. So yeah. There is no commonality, right? So you still have even Reformed dudes that are super offended by Halloween. Mm-hmm. You have more of the missionally minded, you know, like Reformed church planners that are like embracing Halloween and all of its craziness because this is how we connect with our neighbors. How could we miss such an opportunity? Everything that they do minus, you know, celebrating evil, we want to adopt and we want to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And then you have like, even within the same tradition, you have the super, super, like, you know, we're even afraid to call it Reformation Day because we feel like we're flirting with evil. Uh-huh. And so, dude, it's like, they're literally, I could talk to three different guys that all look the same right now, and they're going to have completely like different, you know, mindsets on the whole thing. So, dude, you can't nail it down. It's the weirdest thing.
Dude, so what is Sojourn's position on it? Like, did that come up at the conf last week? Like,
no, there's no position. Again, it's all individually driven.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, dude, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, what's the rhetoric coming out of GECO about this, out of TGC? I'm sure, like, is this McCracken level like cultural stuff, or do they have somebody else writing about Halloween, how we should think about it? Like, what's come out of that organization?
I think TGC has always taken the sort of the redemptive mindset, which is like, yeah, you can go too far, but you know, we can redeem these things and we can make it something to where, you know, it actually can be, something that can, you know, display, you know, the gospel and connection with neighbors and showing love in those ways. So they've always, as far as I've ever seen, they've always taken the redemptive approach rather than just throwing it out, rejecting it.
Right.
So I don't know.
Do either of you know anybody who has, as one of you so eloquently put it earlier, celebrated evil on Halloween? Like, is that
no.
is that a thing that you know of existing in your spheres?
No, I've never seen it.
I mean, minus all like the witches and like saint worshippers on my block. Yeah, nobody I know is celebrating
okay,
evil.
Okay, well, I guess that's my question is like, are there actually witches and Satan worshippers on your block? Because, I don't want to make light of such things. I do, however, feel that like small children in ghoulish costumes is more entertaining than evil.
Dude, there's going to be another reformed guy on your block pretty soon.
Easy, pal.
I know.
Yeah, I don't know.
By on your block, he means in your guest bedroom.
But I think it's coming from some like
on your another thing that rhymes with block.
Right, exactly. Another way to stack the block, boys. I think it comes from what Piper just said is so interesting because I didn't grow up in Reformdom, so we had harvest parties and everybody dressed like a shepherd and all the women looked like shepherds and it was like shepherds galore.
It's like little Bo Peep everywhere.
It was just for some reason there was no acceptable costume that wasn't a shepherd. Like for some reason you couldn't even dress like a construction worker. Somehow that was evil. Like you only could dress up like a shepherd.
It's worldly. Yeah.
Yeah. Everything else was worldly, right? But mom, I want to be a doctor someday. No, you put on this robe and with this rope and tie it around your waist.
I think that's because in good stewardship, the only thing you could use for a costume was like bandanas and bathrobes. And
something
so,
you already have in the house.
Yeah, you end up like putting a bandana on your head and like putting a rubber band around it and then putting on a bathrobe. And so you're like, oh, look, a blue terry cloth shepherd, I think.
Yeah, you look like Axl Rose waking up in the morning.
Shepherd who's also a Crip,
That's right. I mean, somebody wore more like, they might have like a more paisley one. And that's, oh, look, a lady shepherd.
Yeah, but boys, check this out. So you guys can relate to this because you're old enough. But remember, I don't even know if this happens anymore, or maybe it's because we're not in these kind of churches. But remember all the rhetoric that would get passed around, like around Christmas time, like about like, oh my gosh, do you realize how many like children are being sacrificed on October 31st and all of these like things that are happening? We got to be so careful to remove ourselves from the element of evil and our kids getting sucked in, our kids getting sucked into children's sacrifices and all that kind of stuff. I mean, dude, I don't know. That was all the stuff that was being propagated.
That's crazy. I never heard like thing one about children sacrifices. Like
there was
there
was always some sacrificing of some children going on.
That's crazy, dude. That's
and if so not crazy. Children, then like, you know what they do? Do you notice the day after Halloween, there are no black cats in the neighborhood anymore, Ronnie. What do you think happened to them? I'm like, I don't know. Are they sleeping? Cats sleep during the day. I don't know.
They
were sacrificed.
They all fled because there are screaming children everywhere.
Absolutely. 100%. Or they ate too much candy, like the rest of us. They're just bombed out. I don't know.
Do you think that at some level that kind of like scare rhetoric is like just lurid entertainment for a certain kind of Christian? Like in the way that, people read mystery novels or whatever for fun. Like,
but it's self-justification. It's like chick track. Like culture. It's like it's fun for everybody to get together and to go, oh, look at the evil over there. We're doing something right by protecting our children from it. And I don't know. There's some level of saying that like we're doing the right thing by removing ourselves that far away from the culture because we believe it's having such an incredibly negative impact. Sure. I don't know. All that stuff is complex because I was like 6 years old when all that stuff was being laid out for me and they were like tying a noose of a rope around my belly and on my shepherd's costume, right?
Dude, here's what I think is crazy. The fact that like none of the three of us actually became a shepherd vocationally, because you would think that after all that shepherd like rhetoric that we grew up with, we would all become shepherds. Do they even have shepherds anymore? Is that even a thing?
I mean,
is there anybody whose job is shepherd?
Yeah, I know why you to aspire. Like, hey, I'm going to dress like a shepherd because that's my aspiration. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, none of us ended up like going.
This was
that
a
way.
Harvest party, not career day, Ted.
No, I know, but like after dressing up as a shepherd every year,
what was even worse than that? Here's one that you don't get to do anymore. Remember when people would dress up as homeless people?
Halloween? You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, now they're called hipsters.
Right, exactly. I mean, my older brother and sister, who are 10 years older than me, I mean, they dressed as quote-unquote hobos every Halloween.
Yep.
Yeah. I they wore my dad's oversized shirts and all that stuff.
It was a cheap costume for mom and dad. Absolutely. You know, so that was a win-win for everybody.
Can you even imagine that right now? I mean, you see somebody walk up in a costume like that, you're just looking at them going, well, dude, why didn't you dress up this year?
Right. Right.
I used to take when I take my kids into Chicago when I worked downtown there, and they'd come in sometimes, and we were around a college campus, and we would regularly play the game hipster or homeless, because you'd see people like lounging around on the grass, sleeping, and you're like, now are they passed out from substance abuse? They're unshaven. They smell like patchouli. Like, what's going on here? And so you have to guess, and then you walk by and you see like the chemistry textbook. You're like, oh, that's a hipster college student. And if you
that
walk
kid's
by
dad actually manages a hedge fund, he's worth like $8.2 million.
Dad is so proud of him. And then you walk by and somebody else, you see like the bottle in the brown paper bag. You're like, oh, okay, well that one's homeless. I totally would have guessed hipster on that because those shoes are nice. And so yeah, it's the hobo costume doesn't work very well anymore.
Well, check this out. So Big M just informed me via text. Mm-hmm. She said we actually had two little kids this Halloween that dressed as quote unquote hobos and were carrying "Will work for candy" signs.
Oh no! Wow, that's.
But that just kind of showed. This is kind of the area that you know there would be there would be
confusion.
There would not be a heightened sensitivity, you know. In
that's true. Ashland is a few years behind in terms of those kind of sensitive cultural mores.
Exactly. But, crazy, huh?
That's a phrase that has never been uttered in Ashland.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Well, boys, as much as I would like to keep talking about Ashland, we should maybe talk, Pipe, about a development that Ron could implement in his church in Ashland. And that is, you sent us a link last week to a church in Texas that is implementing professional wrestling as a way for men to fellowship. So this church has, they have a warehouse, they have a ring, they do Bible studies in conjunction with professional wrestling practice. So these guys are doing body slams and pile drivers and all these wrestling things. And you sent us, Pipe, you sent us this link expecting us to laugh at it. But I texted you back and I was like, I would legit do that. That looks super fun.
See, then the listener sent, this one was not Christian. It was just, they found it entertaining. They said, I think this is Ted's new hobby. And it was mixed martial arts in like medieval war gear.
Yeah, and I would legit do that.
And
too.
So I sent that to you with no comments and you were like, oh, I would absolutely do that. So listener who sent that link in, you pegged Ted perfectly.
Yeah, whoever well that done. Listener is, like they know me. They've listened closely over the years, and I feel like they've got me figured out. I'm not that complicated. So yeah, obviously the easy joke to make here, and this is the funny like space that we inhabit, the three of us as like smug reformed guys. Like it's easy to laugh about something like that, but then we also laugh about like you know the hyper intellectual like egghead that preaches for an hour and a half. So yeah, I'm gonna play devil's advocate. I'm gonna say that this wrestling men's Bible study is a good thing. And if I lived in that town in Texas, chances that I would have visited that and probably do it on a regular basis are pretty high. I would say like 90th percentile that I would be there and I would be doing that. But again, as man of the cloth, resident man of the cloth, Big R, this smacks of like programmatism, which is something that like reformed people don't like. How does something like this sit with you?
I mean, obviously it smacks of everything I detest in the world.
Of course.
That,
physicality, people breaking a sweat, you know.
Yeah. That's the first part of it. The second is dragging it into the church, which I have my own thoughts on. But you know what, when I step back, like what I try to do now is because try to understand like what kind of context a particular ministry, a particular church might want to like have this type of ministry and if it's beneficial. And dude, I don't know, man. Like I'm not driven towards that. So that's not like just something you're going to see of substance next week. Hey guys, come to, you know, fight night, you know, come to Fight Club where all the men get together and, you know, chew metal and, you know, throw things and beat each other up for the gospel. You know, it's like, it's just that those aren't my sensibilities at all. But so it's easy for me to criticize it because personally, I'm just sort of offended by that kind of stuff. But like, I don't know if a church thinks they can do something and it can be something that connects some dudes. I mean, I don't know. It just, it all starts sounding very furry to me, and I don't know what to do about that. But I don't want to be too smug about it either. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Pipe. Yeah. I don't know. You know.
To me, I think there's a distinct difference between guys getting together and doing something that they all really enjoy. That, I mean, it could be like smoking brisket or brewing beer or professional wrestling or whatever, you know, going on a hike. Like, I don't care, playing golf. And then through that, connecting with other guys in a way that is beneficial for conversations about faith and life, and maybe plugging guys into the church. Making those things a ministry of the church is sort of putting a sanctified label on things that are pretty – they don't – like professional wrestling doesn't have a place in the church. It might right. certainly have a place as a hobby for people, just like sure. any other sport or fun thing does, or silly thing or comedy thing or whatever. So it's the connection to the church that kind of makes me raise an eyebrow. But like guys getting together to do this just kind of makes me chuckle because I'm like, I don't hurt yourselves, guys. Have fun though. Kind of like yeah. Ted playing football in leather helmets once a year, just for fun. Like that. I look at that and I'm like, all right, Ted. I hope you don't get concussed again. But if you started like a leather helmet football church, we would probably have to have a heart to heart. Like that. Yeah, that would be weird, a little weird.
It would be really weird. Yeah,
leather helmet football church.
Dude. For the record, I wouldn't do that. But if somebody else started it, I'd probably go.
You check it out once.
I'd check
Where
it out.
Where do you go? I go to Leather Helmet Presbyterian.
Dude, so
it's called Red Grange Church.
Mm-hmm. More devil's advocate playing though. Like if your affinities are, you know, sitting around in your hipster gear, kind of self-congratulating for how smart you are, which is sort of the affinity of probably at some level all three of the churches that we go to. And that's just the culture that we're in. You know, who's to say that, I mean, it's not wrong if somebody with other affinities, you know, also studying the Bible, also, you know, ostensibly, hopefully practicing good theology. You know, at some level, even though the three of us would be disdainful of like church marketing and kind of, pitching a set of aesthetics to a certain audience, like I think we all do it. You know what I mean? I think every church, like knowingly or unknowingly, does that at some level. Whether your aesthetic is, you know, fight night, or your aesthetic is like leather apron pour over, you know, kale parties. I mean, everybody's kind of doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we think our poison is less poisonous. It's just That's our right. chosen. It's just our chosen. What's, you know?
It's also because we live. I mean, brand. Ron stepped out of. You know, you stepped into a town where this is going to be less true than it is for Ted or me, probably. But we live in places where our propensities are normal. The propensity to talk about Leif Anger at length does not strike anybody as odd in Nashville.
Yeah, because, that's true.
Because they're probably trying to be the next Leif Anger or whatever. You know, the propensity to talk about films and film art and or whatever. Those things are all just normal. But if you go into anywhere that's working class or blue collar, it's probably not so much, and we would not fit in at all. We would not speak the language of anybody, or maybe we could learn it, but it wouldn't be sort of our sort of natural inclination. And in that way, I look at it, and I look at it, and I'm like, okay, well, that's why using this as a means to connect with guys can make a lot of sense in that culture. I think the risk that we run is sort of cultural snobbery, where I think professional wrestling is ridiculous, but I don't know that it's any more ridiculous than like football. It just, it's just a thing I roll my eyes at, whereas football is not. And I don't know that that's fair at all.
Yeah, no, you're right, man. It's just ridiculous in a different way. And it's ridiculous in a slightly less sort of culturally acceptable way. Because if you look at the Venn diagram of like, people who like pro football and Leif Anger, you know, the segment in the middle is going to be bigger than people who like professional wrestling and Leif Anger. But you know, that doesn't necessarily mean it's that different at the end of the day. Interesting stuff. So Ron, as you look at sort of the smorgasbord of ridiculous programmatic things that you could see starting at your church, like what's the one that's slightly embarrassing but appealing to you? Like if you could start anything like this, or if you had to, what would it be?
Man, I don't know, man.
Like a film night or like I know what it would be for you guys. It would be like a gourmet food night. You know what I mean? Where
yeah, we'd probably do something like that.
Like as a church, you start cooking through like Julia Child's cookbook. And
we do like a farm to table night kind of a thing.
Oh, of course you do. And please tell me you call it farm to table night.
Well, we would if we did it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But it's actually, okay. So going back to what Pipe said, that's actually kind of a middle ground thing because something like what you just described with like wrestling or Fight Club, that would actually appeal to a segment of our town. But
sure.
Like, because I'm not driven by that, I'm not going to be as naturally, you know, drawn toward it. But I've also seen the negative side. So I actually explored one of those Fight Club ministries. And like, you know, what they did in terms of just getting the guys together and sort of the activities was fine. But they also had this weirdo like contract that you had to sign that was sort of the quote unquote spiritual component of what they were doing. And dude, it was just wacky and bizarre and like not anything that the three of us would agree with. It was super legalistic. And so that's where I think these things become super problematic is when what undergirds them becomes something that I mean, strays away from even basic Christianity, right, in the gospel.
Sure.
So I think if you just keep it at a level which says, yeah, this is a cool thing to get dudes together with and hang out. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can all be snobby about it, but it's like it's none of it's inherently bad or evil like Halloween. So, you know, but again, it's all going to be driven by our own preferences at the end of the day. You know, I don't know.
No, I think that's real, man. That's a good word. Boys, we have we've done what we always do in this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. This has been fun. It's been interesting. It's good to have the three of us back in the studio. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances. God invites us to cultivate thankful hearts by turning our eyes toward Him in good times and bad. To listen to more Abide Christian Meditations, just go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Christian Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.